On the evening of March 27, 2024, the Country Bookshelf hosted a reading from Sunu Pichandi's poetry collection, My Dear Comrades, with a reading and discussion with three of Bozeman's own activists around poetry, activism, and the intersection where they meet. Sunu Pichandi is a social justice activist, including through her work as a poet and a civil rights attorney. She's the daughter of immigrants from Kerala, India, a queer woman of color, and lives in Washington, D.C. with her family. Her award-winning collection of poems, My Dear Comrades, was published by Regal House in 2023. In it, she includes stories about her experiences as a woman, civil rights attorney, parent, partner, and member of the LGBTQ+ community. Katie lives and works with their family in Bozeman, Montana. Katie is a multidisciplinary artist and poet whose work has appeared in shows from Turtle Island to Hawaii and in print in multiple locations. They are a queer, indigenous, neurodivergent parent who spends most of their time engaging in the ideation of indigenous futures, solidarity, and freedom. Jasmine James is a graduate of MSU Bozeman in English Literature. They have lived in Gallatin Valley since 2013 and have been managing the Bozeman Poetry Collective since 2017. You can hear their work in person regularly at the Steep Mountain Open Mic. Hazel Gonzalez is a woman of trans experience who grew up in Bozeman, having moved to town when she was 5. Hazel has also worked at Erotique for many years, passionately learning about and teaching healthy sexuality and kink. She works to build community and does her utmost to be a healthy and supportive elder queer role model and advocate for queer youth. The Country Bookshelf's general manager, Jamie Winter, introduced the panel.
Welcome to Country Bookshelf. We are your local independent bookstore. We've been in business for over 66 years and women owned and run the entire time. Thank you. We really love to do events with all of our wonderful local authors and do things with our community. And so we're really, really excited about this event to have all of you out here and participating with us tonight. Tonight we are joined by Sunu Pichandi, Katie Chavez, Jasmine James, and Hazel Gonzalez McCord. And our panelists are going to start by sharing some of their creative work. And with that, I will hand it over to them.
So I am Katie Chavez. This is my first time doing poetry since I gave birth. So I wanted to share that because it's special to me. Burning Man. You treated my land like Burning Man. Came with your poison to vacation. Left with our medicine. Left your trash for others to clean up your mess. You treated my land like Burning Man. You broke protocol. Dug in your hooks to build ivory towers from my bones. Took advantage of my hospitality by colonizing my sacred space. Built your institutions. Nurtured them into industrial complex in an effort to make us industrious. Pushed our bodies into dissolution, dirt, death. Stole our children, ripped the justice from our wombs, forced your patriarchy down our throats, but wild tongues cannot be tamed, only cut out, and your violence cannot be tamed, only cut out. So cut it out. Decolonization is not a metaphor, and my existence is not imaginary, so don't paint it on your face or tattoo tribal on your body as you smudge away my ancestors, as you stand on stolen ground. As you try to drown me in blood, bury my heart in wounded knee, as I am redesigning my DNA, pulling my friends out of rivers, as relatives drowning in their own tears struggle to stay afloat as shackles pull them out to sea. Into new hands. Promised lands, promise broken. As we reach into ourselves and regurgitate our history into bleached out textbooks, school to prison pipeline, poverty art prose, culture to contemporary, Western masterpiece to native folk art. Creative types go to Burning Man, to learn about destruction. Pay to do what has been done to us by the very institutions that try to bury us, burn us, destroy us. You treated my land like Burning Man, but we don't. Bringing something into existence to destroy is not our way. Natives only. Land back. Land back. Please run your arrows across my spine and let me feel my heartbeat in every place. Hitch not my wrist, place me on your pillar and sacrifice my mouth-watering ego. So hi, everybody. I am KD Chavez. I'm a multidisciplinary artist, and one of those disciplines happens to be poetry. My work centers around my intersecting identities, solidarity, and freedom. I love to think of liberatory, yummy futures that we can find ourselves free to thrive in all of ourselves. And I like to think and plan around what that looks like. So what does a decolonial future look like? What does land rematriation look like? And what does justice look like for us? I am a mom and an organizer, and I will say that the closest people to me know how to find the silliness under my stoicism when you see me out in the street. I have two more poems. This one is called Elks. When your ears are ringing with your heartbeat, and your wrists are yearning for warmth, the sharpest blade is not your friend. You have learned to live inside of a forest fire for decades. The scars seen and unseen prove your resilience. The passing seasons wear hard. It's always difficult to breathe. And sometimes you pray for a trapline. But your prayers are always answered by rain, and your lungs, filled with dense smoke, survive. One more day. This one's called Wayfinder. My gender is older than any concept. Brown like dirt, burnt rose clay, love stories of my ancestors. Planting seeds of freedom for generations to come. It is earth and flesh in abundance, guttural, hot, sacred, still, beyond acceptance. My gender is the happiness that has made its home in my cheeks.
I'm Hazel Gonzalez. This is called Spider Woman. The great grandmother sits and weaves resplendent birds around her head. She spins her tail and all believe, but growing eyes, our sight, we grieve. So oft we lose track of the threads. We compensate with discourse. Twilight sings to us of Ouroboros, of life's phantasms, and from fictitious station, the curse of language for what we behold, our avidity to explicate creation. And blessed life or death we beg unfold. Space and time, bands thick as thieves, all of existence is in her threads. A butterfly's wings wave lazily, a soft hello on summer eves, and inclement weather elsewhere dreads. Her weave and weft connect perforce, yet all bereft we stay our course. All we see is close relation. For what's beyond, we've no obligation. But we all dangle from her fangs, individuals with separate pangs. The Eavestrom eye can see further. All the ways our thrashings murder. While some whine and flail without their way, they pull and tug and tear the cloth as if nothing matters but their wrath. Could we but feel like spiders survey, divining from the gentle touch, our actions pull on oh so much. With disparate fortunes, it's hard to see, and some are numb to the harm they spread. They take and gather all with greed, grandmother's pleas they don't attend. solipsism, they exhort, systemic privilege reinforced. On life's sojourns set out naive, perhaps with a collective intent, we could create this world implored, like Kubla's dome without the war. Merge all the threads, working wed, we might evolve civilization. Weave seen and unseen, all as gold, and claim our innate divine station with compassion and communion. Unload our souls from heart-sick hands, deific grace and mortals merge. And from this place I do harangue and plead a merging of the clans. On each of us unity hangs. You, like I, grandmother nurtures, salving the world without delay. Join with joy and love and play, and with one heart we make a merger. I'm Hazel Gonzalez, and I am an intersectional mutt. I am transgender. I am disconnected from my ancestry, from my grandmother's side, which would be Mesoamerican indigenous. I am all sorts of queer. I work at Erotik, and I do outreach for healthy sexuality, and especially when it comes to the therapy of BDSM and kink and how to keep those lifestyles healthy. I was a parent, but I lost my child at 15 months old, and I think that speaking volumes is something that I can highlight because of the vast array of minority influence that finds itself pinpointed in myself. But everybody should take what I do in public and find their self to step forward with it. It's part of the reason that I joined Queer Bozeman, was so that I could help other people to find safe spaces for themselves and the parts of themselves that they might be afraid to show in public.
I'm Jasmine James. Youth. The je ne sais quoi, that fleeting liminal impermanence. Vicenarian, you perch upon your throne, and I implore you, starry eyes damp with laughter and light, on bended knee, I beseech thee, stall the barter of selfish thoughts and peaceful solitude for wedding rings and obligations. Hem and haw to and fro, procrastinate, obliterating the freedom of youth. Boys. Serenity, breezing through the chaos of my life, a priapic poultice to ease the suffering of my concupiscent youth. I lust for service. Gorilla grip the doctrinaire of my place in the world. Bucking these ideals, bareback, sudsy suitors scrub the dishes, subduing a century's dogma. Mirrored equality, if only between the sheets, trips my sympathetic nerves. They will love me as long as I allow myself to be loved. Frozen. Incapable of accepting affection, stumbling in darkness, frail, I cannot fight, finding myself sprinting for my life and the preservation of my gossamer ego. Both of the pieces I read were from Dawnings, Bozeman Poetry Collective zine. Last year was our first zine. This year we are publishing another. We are currently accepting submissions, and so if you have some art, some poetry, some words that you want to share with your community, you can email those to bpcsubmissions@gmail.com. We are accepting submissions until April 25th. I manage the Poetry Collective. I've been doing that for 8 years now. We meet monthly at Steep Mountain Tea House, and we collect donations that go to local nonprofits in our community. Both March and April, we are collecting donations for the Gallatin Valley Food Bank. And so if you show up to open mic and you think to yourself, I tipped my barista well enough, please put some dollars in the vase and we will send them to the food bank. Thank you. bpcsubmissions@gmail.com. You can find that information as well as a digital copy of Dawnings Volume 1 on our Instagram.
Thank you so much. Can you give a big round of applause for your local poet, activist, artist? That was really special to connect with all of you and to hear about your respective experiences, life experiences, activism, and why you put yourself out there. I think that was really well said. Thank you for all that you've shared so far. I can't wait for our conversation that will follow. I want to start with a few thank yous. My name is Sunu Chandy, and I want to thank Nell. Okay, first of all, Nell works here. Nell was in charge of this whole thing, and it's Nell's birthday, so. So that's important. Sharon, raise your hand. Sharon is my friend who's sitting in the middle from like a million years ago in Boston. And the reason I'm here, because Sharon said, come to Bozeman. There'll be a room of people who have fun and we'll do this thing together. So thank you, Sharon and family. So really happy to be here. I put this book out almost a year ago, my dear comrades, and have been lucky to be doing readings at a number of different bookstores. I also am a civil rights lawyer, so when I go for a work conference, I'll just see if there's an event I can do in the same city. But this week is special because we're on spring break with my spouse here, Erica, my 14-year-old, and this is just like a fun week we're doing. And we've never been to Montana, and we went to Yellow Spring yesterday. And so this is just a fun couple of days to be here, and I thought, let's see if it works out. So I'm so happy to have done this event, and I always do it in collaboration with local writers. So thank you all for joining me. I'm going to share a few poems, mostly new ones, and then two from the book. And since we sort of had a sort of like a queer rights, queer theme going, I thought I would read one of those pieces. Too Pretty. October on the subway, roses at my side, kids being loud. One skinny girl with a cap and a pretty smile gets up to give me her seat and takes this chance to sit on her friend's lap. I read the paper and look over at these girls, so free and easy, they are laughing, laughing. I look at the pink, pink roses and how I say I'm not a romantic and how this whole roses thing is going to ruin my reputation against romance. I watch the girls, I watch the skinny girl in boys' clothes and pretty smile flirt with all the other girls. So free and easy, they are laughing, laughing. And the man next to me, he is also watching, watching. And the man next to me, he leans over to me and he says to me, hey, miss, hey, miss, that's too pretty to be a boy, right? As if somehow that thought disgusts him and he wants my agreement about his disgust. And me, I'm just relieved he knows I'm a miss and not a pretty boy, and I just shrug and I say nothing because I'm afraid. Afraid to say, what does a she look like? What does a boy look like? What does too pretty look like? And what is your problem exactly? And I don't know whether his disgust is he thinks girls who look like boys should be beat up or boys who look like girls should be beat up, because we know they both are. I only know I was relieved. He didn't know my pink, pink roses were for a girl, and I have this safety of passing. And I think to myself, y'all sitting there, laughing, laughing, sitting there on your sixth grade girlfriend's lap, so free and easy, laughing, laughing. Be safe, my handsome girls. Be safe, my pretty boys. Thank you. I did a reading a couple days ago in Minneapolis, and my co-presenter was from rural Minnesota, and we were just sort of breaking this binary of like cities are safe and rural places don't have queer people, and just shaking that up. And he talked a lot about supportive family members he had on a dairy farm in Minnesota, and I talked about like things that happened in New York City that weren't cool, right? And so that poem has been on my mind this week. This is a newer poem. Sunday morning in Rock Creek Park. With all of the beauty of the nature here, I wanted to pull this poem out. We dropped off our daughter at the Unitarian Church for religious education in D.C., and my spouse and I went to this workshop several months ago. It was a birding and poetry workshop, so there was something for both of us. One, Sunday morning in Rock Creek Park in the poetry and birding workshop, I first learned about the red-bellied woodpecker and how it was misnamed by the ornithologists because it was on its back, because it was already dead, with its touch of red on its belly. If they had focused on this bird when it was alive, they would have noticed its bright red mohawk right there blazing. I decided again then, from now on, I tell everyone my real name, who I really am, while I am me, while I am still alive. 2. This was also the time I learned that mourning dove is actually spelled M-O-U-R-N-I-N-G dove. I am so sorry I have misnamed you for so long. Even this very morning I misnamed you when a friend texted me the audio of you on her windowsill. And I wrote back so confidently, M-O-R-N-I-N-G, that's a mourning dove. I had misnamed you for a time of day when you're actually named for lamenting. You're lamenting so distinctive that it became you, that it became your beloved name. I was just telling the others, I was looking up abortion rights in Montana because I worked at National Women's Law Center as a legal director for 6 years and just recently shifted to another nonprofit where we work on lots of public interest civil rights issues, including reproductive rights and justice. And so, see, there's a lot going on here. There's like ballot initiatives, there's the constitutional rights, perhaps, Supreme Court openings on your Supreme Court. So many of you are probably active on many fronts, and that's one that I definitely am sending a lot of love and support for. The middle part of the book is about my journey to becoming a parent, including through lots of fertility treatments. And this poem is not in the book because it's a newer one, and I wrote it after Roe was overturned. Miscarriage management. After the longed-for messages on the answering machine about the good cells multiplying, one afternoon the doctor announced he could not locate a heartbeat. He said I would need a DNC before trying again. It was in the days immediately following Mythili's wedding where I had read a poem to the gathered family as the fetus cells were leaving my body in the form of heavy bleeding. No one knew why I ran away right after the ceremony and took a taxi to the bus to the subway, getting all the way from the suburbs of Philadelphia back to Fort Greene, Brooklyn. The next day, the doctor said, bleeding doesn't always mean miscarriage. After 3 days, he told me to go across the street to some other office for the DNC procedure. I called a few friends to ask if someone could accompany me the next day as required. Shalini took all her work meetings from the waiting room on that day. And I did not have to justify to anyone why I needed a DNC. I did not have to fear arrest on top of my heartbreak. I had the protections of Roe. I had the protections of the U.S. Constitution. It did not depend on my state of residence. It did not depend on my attorney general. I did not have to prove I was raped. I did not have to prove my life was in danger. I did not have to say the word incest. I did not have to be 10 years old. I only needed to follow my doctor's instructions and tend to my once again broken heart. I only needed to say a hopeful prayer for the fifth and last IVF procedure. I only needed to find one friend, someone who would come with me, someone who would see me home. So yesterday, like as we were flying here, I was trying to listen to the court case about abortion medication, and our opponents are so conservative and extremist that even the Supreme Court is like, wait, what? Like, the FDA said that was fine like 25 years ago, and you aren't into it, so you think nobody should have it? Like, when Amy Coney Barrett is like, hold on, what? You know you have some extremist anti-reproductive rights people bringing quote-unquote cases to court. So just fingers crossed for that one case. But as you all know, we're in like legal chaos that has led to so much harm for so many people. This is a poem entitled, My Daughter Asks Why I'm Tearing Up During the Unitarian Church Service. We come here and cry because all week long, news of graveyards of dead children from this place many of us have never been way heavy. In the 5 minutes I catch this morning, the UN ambassador from Iran says even after all those months and months of war, they didn't lose nearly this number of children in the Ukraine. Sitting in church after breakfast between two alive parents, My daughter sketches what she remembers from the afternoon before. Witnessing a Palestinian flag being draped over a McDonald's sign in downtown Washington, D.C. That was the moment when we heard the loudest cheers from the crowds of protesters. She wished we had a marker to write on a placard that we are with them, and to also say on the same placard that we also oppose all that's terrible in the world, done by anyone. All the terrible? We are on the side of the people, the ones who do not act terribly, even with good reason. She wants us to join the protest, and she's also afraid of others who might glare at her or worse. She asked me, who is the governor of Palestine? Why isn't he doing something? She says, hold on. Their sign says we Americans are paying for these 30,000 asterisk deaths, asterisk. AP News says the number tops 30,000 as of the end of February 2024. I refuse to send her the video of the flag covering the sign or to post those pictures anywhere. Even the U.S. congresswomen who speak up are harshly reprimanded. Yet some of us know our dollars are responsible, and we cannot keep silent anymore. Thank you. All right, I'm going to read two more. This is the newest one. I've only read this once. Has all kinds of scribbling on it. You see how the magic happens. And then I'll read a last one from the book. And I have a series of new poems called Being and Belonging, colon. So this is the latest one. Being and Belonging, Unpacking on the L2 Bus. Entering the L2 bus, a meeting in her headphones, the bus driver stops her. Half paying attention, she thinks it's something about her bus fare, but he keeps gesturing towards her, and so she stops. He says to her, "Hope this isn't offensive, but are you gay?" She gives a complicated answer involving phrases like non-binary presenting and queer without checking his box, but he understands that the answer is enough of a version of yes. As he continues his inquiry, he says, "It's not that he thinks gay people shouldn't get married. It's just maybe they shouldn't be parents." And some of his gay colleagues back at the bus depot got upset at him for saying that. "What do you think? You wouldn't be mad if I said that, right?" My spouse, often much less hot-headed than me, says, "Where do you think you got that idea? Let's unpack that." He said, "Well, I just think boys should have fathers, don't you think?" And my tomboy spouse in her home with mostly just her mother and her grandmother and her sister came forward with evidence. She said, "I know a lot of young men who were just raised by their mamas and grew up to be fine men. I do know this to be true." He seemed to pause, and she said, "To be sure, a father might be a nice to have. But with so many separated families, that's not always the case, right?" And they keep chatting. And then she said she needed to get back to her meeting, her colleague having heard the entire exchange. And it was not until afterwards, as she was passing by to exit the bus, did she share this part. "You know, my beautiful wife and I may get a lot of things wrong, but I do think we're good parents to our daughter. She's in middle school now. She's 14. And with that, she went to give him a fist bump. And at that moment, at that bus stop, the bus driver got up from his seat. He unlatched the gate that kept him in its seat. He came forward towards her and he said, "May I give you a hug?" And when I tell my friends this story, they ask if my wife is some kind of prophet. And I just beam because I know many of us like to think we have good hearts. But this one, she must have her mother's wild grace and her own wild patience too. Thank you. And I'm going to close with this one. And I guess my introduction is, I have a little bio on the back of my book and maybe you'll buy it and I'll sign it for you and you can read about it. But I think you know the deal. Do civil rights law, I write poetry, and I like to connect with people who are about the kinship and the connection and acknowledging that we're in this together. So thank you all for joining me. All right, I'm going to close with this poem, teaching my daughter to recap the toddler toothpaste. Don't push hard. Don't push hard. Don't push so hard. No need to press it so. Just place it gently on top. Let it settle into its place. Only then, gently twist. Not that way. Not that way. The other way. Try one way. Try one way. If it doesn't work, then stop. Stop. Stop completely. Then try another way. Trust me. Trust me. You will know when it is time to stop turning. Thank you. Thank you so much. So we have some questions. There's like three questions. And then maybe we'll just go down the row and you can answer any of them. Or if there's something you wanted to say, you can say that instead. It's pretty flexi flow. So how does art and activism connect in your work? How does your race, queerness, or any other identities show up in your work? And are there areas where you feel like your activism is still developing, places where you're learning and growing? And so we'll do one round of that, and then we'll see if there's questions from the audience.
Hi again. So I am Katie Chavez. I use they, them pronouns. I am a parent, organizer, poet for my day job. I work at the Climate Justice Alliance as their resource mobilization director. So it is a what it sounds like. It's a group of over, I think we're up to like 90 member orgs that are climate justice, local nonprofits all over the nation. And yeah, just working to make sure that our communities are cared for, especially communities living as fenceline communities during this climate crisis. All of that connects with the poetry that I write, the organizing that I do in the community. I have to give a shout out to both. If Sean is still here, and Francesca, they're both involved with Mountain Time Arts, which is an organization that I'm also involved with that did the teepees up on Pete's Hill, if y'all have seen those. I just stepped down as board director to spend more time with my kiddos, but I definitely still go to all of the events and y'all should support them. And Yellowstone Revealed is a thing that I am very passionate about in just talking about the intersectionality of like land rematriation, indigenous justice, and climate justice and social justice. I kind of like see the way that I do things just like unable to be disjointed from each other, right? Like as an indigenous queer person moving through the world that is in this climate, a lot of my personal ethos is like deeply like place-based, connected to the land, connected to my ancestors. So for me, it's not so far as choosing to focus on climate or like choosing to focus on indigenous issues or queerness. It's more of just like, it is who I am, therefore how I move in space. Also outside of the Western idea of time and space is just part of my being. In the sense of where I feel like my activism is still developing. So I actually first was politicized into organizing while I was going to school at Florida State University and was part of a group called the Dream Defenders, which was very involved with just like Black liberation movements and had the opportunity to be mentored by people like Angela Davis and Harry Belafonte and Patricia Hill Collins and the like. So my journey into organizing was, I think, jumping into the deep end of the pool and learning just about of all the intersectionality. I'm really happy that Sunu brought up Palestine because as an indigenous person, there's deep solidarity with Palestinians and the struggle. And I actually first learned of the Palestinian struggle back when I was going to college because one of the co-founders of the Dream Defenders is now running the U.S. Center for Palestinian Rights. So I had learned about the struggle like in 2008 or around then. But like I said, all of these things are very connected. So I think that's where the growth happens, I think, is like I often find like the intersectionality stacking on top of each other. And then my mind is like, oh, like my heart just goes out to
all of the things just stacking up all of the time. And for folks that are living in just like spaces where, kind of like my poem Elks, just like so hard to breathe and so hard to find that centering during times where atrocities are happening. And just like, I always think of my ancestors and how they survived 90% of their folks being eradicated from here, you know, like Turtle Island and the Global South, and just like seeing the genocide happening still today is just, if I didn't have kids, if my ancestors didn't have kids, I wouldn't be here, which is part of the reason why my partner and I chose to also have children and bring that love and understanding into the world. And honestly, I feel like a lot of what I do now is thinking of future generations and just like the hope that exists in the face of the apocalypse, and making sure that we love each other and care for each other and lift each other up, especially when some of us are wading in the water a lot harder and longer than some of our peers. So thank you for having me. And
I'm Jasmine James. I also use they, them pronouns. I would say that my race, my queerness, my other identities show up most often when I'm hurt, when I'm feeling really targeted by the world. I am most likely to not necessarily bemoan being Black and queer and from somewhere else, but those are the times that it's made most evident to me that I'm not the same, because I don't think of myself as Black, and I don't think of myself as non-binary. I think of myself as Jasmine, and sometimes I think of myself as an American. But when everyone else sees Black first and they see queer first, it's hard to just be myself without those identities. I would say that's also kind of where I'm struggling the most to develop my activism, is that I don't want to talk about it. I don't want to keep talking about being Black. I'm tired. Yeah. I don't know that I'm doing a good job growing there, but I think you don't get to choose. If you keep making art, you get to keep growing. That's why I took over the Poetry Collective, was so that other people can have this space where they can grow, where they can have these difficult conversations with themselves in front of other people. I think some of the favorite poets I have are the farmers who drive an hour to be here for 45 minutes and read poems about their wife that they love so much. And they do that in a room filled with queers, a room full of people that they don't identify with at all, but they know that's where the poetry is, and so that's where they want to be. Yeah, that's, and connect, being able to connect that to making donations in my community, donations to the food bank, donations to the animal shelter, donations to Warriors in Quiet Waters for the veterans, to feel like we can all get together and have this big feeling, and then we can use this as a space to create good in our community. Even if we only send $10 or $20, that's something. We all got together and we did something, and that feels good.
Hello, I'm Hazel Gonzalez. I am transgender. I am sapiosexual, which means I'm attracted to intellect, emotional, or intelligence. I am Mesoamerican. I'm American. But my ancestry is Mesoamerican Indigenous, is Welsh, Irish, Scottish. I work closely with people involving healthy sexuality and relationship issues. I am invisibly disabled. I am neurodivergent. I am a Montanan. I have my family was kind of from when they came through Canada down and settled in Livingston years ago. So they've been associated with local universities for quite some time. So I feel like maybe I've got a genetic connection to the sapiosexuality, because we're all such higher education people. And I guess what I like to do is, with Queer Bozeman, make safe spaces for queer individuals and be able to make those safe spaces where people can have fun and be able to express themselves. I think I covered that earlier, but I guess there's a lot of intersectionality that happens in me, and talking about any of it is, I guess, a way to jump boundaries and borders and reach out to all sorts of various different types of people. So though I'm associated with Queer Bozeman, the way that I like to do my activism is on a one-on-one basis with people who might otherwise struggle with finding a connection with someone who is different.
Thank you all for sharing such personal stories and being so vulnerable and knowing that it's for the good, for that's how we connect with each other and find empathy in sharing, just like that weird bus story. I'm like, he really wanted someone to say, like, that's cool, you can be anti-queer people being parents. Like, that's what he was going for, you know? But it's in having those conversations that apparently things move forward, and when we have the energy and time and space to do that, it can really lead to powerful results. And also, we can't be doing that all the time because it's work and it's tiring and it's hard, and I would not have done that. Ways that I am struggling, Palestine is the way that I'm struggling. I did a program in Jerusalem when I was in college. I majored in peace and global studies, and some of my classmates did a program in Northern Ireland, and some of us did a program in Jerusalem. And so even though I don't have people there or identity base there, because I lived there for 3 months, and we lived on a kibbutz, we went to refugee camps, we went to Gaza, we went to all of the places there, I have just felt this immense responsibility to bring it up in whatever spaces I'm in, just because we can't forget that's happening. But also my poems feel very like, I'm grappling with it. And I shared the stage with a Palestinian poet about a month ago, and he had a very different take. He was not grappling with, should we mention it at all? His cousin had been killed in Gaza. And I also have a former colleague whose Israeli cousin had been killed on October 7th. So depending on what space I'm in, I calibrate, and I don't know if I like that, but I know that I can't be silent. So that's just something that I'm struggling with. Another thing is, in my job, they have a book club, and they read What We Don't Talk About When We Talk About Fat by Aubrey Gordon, I think is her name. And I had never read that. I actually am very new to fat justice, and it was mind-blowing. I learned so much, and I'm still working on that. When I came from working in the government and civil rights to nonprofit about 7 years ago, I became an activist on disability rights because there were things that were happening when I was at Health and Human Services in terms of ASL being used. One of the laws we enforced was ensuring accessibility in healthcare. And so they did those kinds of things when we had programs. And so when I got to the civil rights advocacy space, none of that was happening. And so I instituted a speaker series, and we had different disability rights speakers come in, like one a month, and just educate the staff on lots of issues about disability rights and justice. But I often see that still an area where I'm still learning and growing, and often it not being included in spaces that I'm in. So those are a couple examples. I mean, I was at the AWP, Association for Writing Programs, conference this spring, and one of the professors gave such a beautiful talk about how she educated herself on trans rights and literature about trans people, and gave a whole speech about her process around that, which I thought could have been used, like you can sort of swap in almost any group about how you don't try to put the burden on that group, but you do your own reading and learning and then check things out with people you trust and sort of educate yourself to be a good ally and representative, right? When a voice is missing in a room and you know that you need to say something. And also just being brave, because you're probably going to get it wrong sometimes, right? That when I was going to that event at that bookstore to share the stage with two other poets, and one was Palestinian, I was like, I don't know what to do, right? Like, I can read my poem, which feels really like meh, or I can like say nothing, right? And he made a comment afterwards, which he might have made anyway, or it might have been made because of my poem. But he was like, I'm here in support of like those who fight for Palestine, whatever they do, or something like that, right? And I was like, okay, like that makes sense to me that he has that opinion. But I also want to have my opinion and share it and be brave to share it, because that could also open up space for other people. Because in so many workplaces, people are getting retaliated against just for bringing it up, or are scared to bring it up. I did an event for a corporate space, and it was the LGBTQ group that brought me in to do a little workshop. And she was like, you can't mention affirmative action or Palestine. And I was like, wow. Okay. So, and she said, because we will be retaliated against. And I was like, eee. Like, I didn't want these activists there at that job to face retaliation. And it was a closed event. It wasn't a public event. And so I said, okay. But that's the world we're living in, and people are afraid. So I think if you have the positional power or you are able to do it, like, just be that voice is what I would say. So those are some areas that I'm just trying to figure it out day to day. Yeah. All right. Should we ask the group if they have questions? Okay. Oh, she wanted the poem about the DNC called Miscarriage Management because, you know, it literally came up in the argument yesterday where Amy Coney Barrett was like, well, what if the doctor has to do a procedure, but there's actually like nothing living there and it's just taking like the stuff out? And the person was like, yeah, they don't want to do that either. And she was like, whoa. You know what I mean? Because it's their positions are so extreme. Right? They've taken such extreme positions, and so many people are left without health care. Okay, questions? So introduce yourself again and just name the organization again. Can you come up here and do it? Because I'm not going to be able to repeat all that, and I want everyone to see you and hear what you're saying. Please.
I tend to hijack conversations all the time. So I just wanted to kind of go on to what you were saying about making space for people. And you were saying, like, even if you're not right, to just do it. I actually like want to take it further and say, even if you feel like you're not heard, keep doing it, because someone somewhere needs to hear what you're saying. And so I think that that's really important to remember, is to really have that voice, listen to that voice, and to amplify that voice. And so I just wanted to say that to like further what you were saying, because it's so true. Even if you feel like you're in the wrong, because people like us, you know, like we've been policed and censored and everything all the time and all our lives, to the point where I have to figure out exactly what you said. You have to gauge the room. You know, are they ready to hear what I have to say? Or is it going to be perceived as hostile? Because that's what we women get labeled all the time. And I take this seriously too, because my daughter is a Indigenous queer person. And that's the person that is most likely to be murdered in the country. Missing and murdered Indigenous women, it gets even worse when you talk about queer women. And so people like KD, people like my daughter, you are so valuable. And you all too, like, because we're allies and we're in solidarity. And so I just want to thank you all for sharing your voices. You're amazing.
Thank you. Thank you for coming up here. And to your point of you don't know who needs to hear it, is I didn't read this poem tonight, Sleep, but it's about, you know, my parents and they're like on again, off again acceptance journey. And a former colleague was like, she's not queer at all, but she is in an interfaith marriage. And she was like, oh my gosh, that poem, it's like my life. And it's like, it can land in a way that's analogous that you might not even expect. And my new friend here, Amy, was like, oh, your poem's about Stanton. And I was like, what? Because I've been doing readings for a year and no one has ever mentioned that poem to me. And she's like, that exact thing happened to us. Like, we were tried to go there and it was bad. I was like, I know. So it's like, you just have no idea how things will land directly or by analogy. And just, I just want to say thank you for making that point about speaking up and sharing our truth, because that's how we are stronger and grow together. So thank you so much. Do any of you have any final comments, or if not?
So I worked for Planned Parenthood for like a decade. And I often, like, my mind with a lot of just, you know, like the overturn of Roe and just access to abortion, like in my head, just like from my lived experience, I'm like, abortion existed before colonization was even a thing. So I think that if you're trying to honor people in space, that includes access to body sovereignty and what people's autonomy and just self-determination. So I guess that's just the thing that I want to say, is that if it's something that you're examining, you should also examine that it predates all the things. So, yeah.
Maybe I'll ask y'all one last question then about if there's anything like people in this space can support or do. I don't know if it's like the organization you're raising funds for now, or particular organizations, or campaigns or spaces that they can support. Just maybe we'll do a last round with that and close out, if that sounds okay. Oh, you can join Democracy Forward's email list. I mean, that's where I work now. I'm a senior advisor with Democracy Forward, and this organization was created when Trump came into power to bring lawsuits, and they filed over 100 cases against a range of initiatives in the federal government. That's how I came to know them, because when I was at the National Women's Law Center, we litigated cases together, including on pay equity, data collection, on a range of different things. And I like how they show up and just sort of work in the background alongside legacy civil rights organizations to push forward cases. And I just joined in September to help with the attacks on DEI and racial justice. And there is something happening in Montana, which I have to look into, but as in many places that have public health boards or DEI sort of things, they're all being struck down. Even though, short version, the admissions thing changed, other things didn't change, but our opponents are taking that and trying to act like they changed and just sort of tell everyone that. And then again, things are being shut down. So if you're in a place where they're like, no more VP of DEI, or like, let's call it something else or shut it down, don't just take that at face value. In some states, those rules are changing locally, but in general, programs for racial justice and inclusion in DEI are legal and valid and need to continue. Our family just went to see and pay respects where George Floyd was murdered in Minneapolis a couple days ago, and it was so powerful to be there. And I wrote an article last week, and I talked about, these things are still legal. We can't keep them shutting down. They just barely got created a few years ago, you know, including after the murder of George Floyd. And now we have Next Benedict killed. And, you know, we need to have more inclusive programs. And this legal publisher, they had like a handful of edits, including taking out those two names. And I was like, I don't think so. Right? Like, we need to have those names in there, because those are human beings who were killed, essentially, and so much work has been spurred in their honor and memory. So again, with the saying the thing, right? So Democracy Forward is a wonderful organization, and I still rep for National Women's Law Center in my personal capacity, because they are a 50-year gender justice organization and are constantly standing up for trans rights, because people are always saying, oh, it's going to hurt women. And it's like, if you are against trans people, you're going to hurt women across all different identities and spectrums, and there's going to be more gender policing, which is just bad, period, for all people. So National Women's Law Center and Democracy Forward, they're all on social media. They have, you know, email updates, but those are two organizations I'd love to support. And I'm on the board of Transgender Law Center. I was telling them I'm only allowed to be on one board at a time. That's my family rule. But because I was at National Women's Law Center, it was so important to have that be a visible thing. Like, the legal director of the National Women's Law Center is on the board of the Transgender Law Center. I guess it's okay then, right? Like, I was doing that. But now that's done, and I still just love it. I learned so much from the people. Shelby Chestnut is there, a Native person, is the ED now, and they're wonderful. And I just actually am there now because I enjoy being in that community and learning from folks. All right, let's just do one round of that, and then we can wrap.
So for me, I work for the Climate Justice Alliance. Anything climate justice related, if you want to know what's happening on the front lines, check out that website. And then the two orgs for me that I want to rep locally are very close to my heart. And one is Mountain Time Arts, just for spreading, for using art as a disarming force to just like talk about things like land rematriation and indigenous sovereignty and climate justice, all of the things. And then the other one is just like a very close personal thing. And the Help Center, honestly, like, I've been a person that has had clinical depression my whole life, and they've saved me. I'll just, like, multiple times. So shop at Saks, help the Help Center. They're really great.
So as I said, the Bozeman Poetry Collective this month is collecting funds for Gallatin Valley Food Bank. And so if you want to support the collective and you want to support the food bank, you can show up at open mic this Friday at Steep Mountain Tea House from 6 to 8 p.m. I will not be there because I will be in Chicago. It will be a lot of fun for me, but it will also be a lot of fun for you. Bring your poems. Yes, if you are an artist or you think, I'm not an artist, but I wrote this poem one time, please submit it to the zine. Yes, because the zine, it's a community project. We're not charging people for this. You can donate for a physical copy, or you can not donate, and I'll give you a physical copy anyway. The Poetry Collective is about community. I'm just the manager. The Poetry Collective is you guys. Yeah, you guys who didn't write any poems and didn't show up. You're still a part. Right now, we don't have any physical copies. It's electronic right now, and you can find that online on our Instagram. If you want a digital copy for yourself, you can email me at bpcsubmissions@gmail.com, and I will email you a copy of the zine, and I won't charge you anything for it, because this is about sharing and each other and love.
Okay, so I've plugged Queer Bozeman twice now. I might as well do it a third time. Hope House, absolutely.
Therapy Thursday! It's the best dance party in town.
Thank you. Yeah. Yeah, we throw a good party. Yeah, we throw really fun queer events. Like, we've got, right now, Therapy Thursday is kind of in a holding pattern. We're trying to figure out what to do in order to bring it back. There were some snafus, but we've got Queers and Bears, and we've got the Queer Tea, which is also at Steep. QueerBozeman.com, right? Pride House is another organization that's wonderful for local outreach and support. I feel like there's a ton of organizations through the Rainbow Collective. Queer Yoga, that's right. That's a good time. We have Bozeman Pride coming up May 27th through June 2nd. Yeah, that's awesome. Thank you.
You have just heard a recording of a poetry reading and discussion featuring Sunu P. Chandi reading from her poetry collection, My Dear Comrades, and local poet activists Katie, Jasmine James, and Hazel Gonzalez. The event was held at the Country Bookshelf on the evening of March 27th, 2024. This has been a Beyond the Deep End production, recorded and produced by Joy LaClaire for broadcast and archiving on listener-supported Gallatin Valley Community Radio, KGVM Bozeman. You can do your part to keep events such as these accessible beyond their space-time limitations by contributing financially to this all-volunteer-staffed radio station of, by, and for our community by going to kgvm.org and click on the Gold Support KGVM button at the top of the page. We thank you for listening and for your support.